We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Welcome back. It's 10 minutes after 5 o'clock. Thank you for spending some time with Paul and David and me. How you doing, Paul? Feeling okay?
Doing okay, yeah. What am I suffering from again?
I think you're suffering from a computer virus at this point, and I think you just infected my computer because it just kind of imploded.
I thought it was smallpox.
So, oh, was that it? Smallpox?
No, it's scurvy and severe erectile dysfunction.
Oh, boy.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so.
Be a problem. So, yeah, Paul's at home today. Getting better.
Just a cold.
It's just a cold. Thank goodness.
But I'm trying not to infect you.
Yeah. So let's look at what's trending today. I'll do this without any notes because my computer is down. Today at the Capitol, it was a bigger clown farm than it usually is. Roughly 24 House Republicans stormed a closed door deposition in a secure House Intelligence Committee to rail against a Democratic-led impeachment inquiry. They said, we want to be allowed in here. It's closed door. But in fact, the committee, which is made up of Republicans and Democrats, that's how committees function. If you don't sit on that committee, you don't get to go to that party. So outside, Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida demanded that they be allowed in. And also Representative Steve Scalise also decided that they were going to storm the Bastille, as it would be. Here's Steve.
What is Adam Schiff trying to hide? I think that's a question so many people have, so many of my colleagues have, so many people in the press should have, is through those hidden closed doors over there, Adam Schiff is trying to impeach a president of the United States behind closed doors, literally trying to overturn the results of the 2016 election.
So a couple of notes. Adam Schiff is part of an inquiry into impeachment, and Adam Schiff does not have the power to overturn the results of a 2016 election. Adam Schiff does not, in his little committee, have the power to impeach anyone. So I don't think he's trying to hide anything, as it is a bipartisan committee, and they are trying to get to the bottom of what, if anything, the president is hiding. So just some clarity around those claims. And by the way, testimony is underway now after this little stunt. Testimony is underway after the lawmakers have been removed for disrupting the impeachment probe.
The thing that's confusing to me is that there are rules, believe it or not, even in Washington, D.C., and the House rules state that only members can participate in depositions if they serve on the committees holding those depositions. So that's usually House Intelligence, Foreign Affairs, and Oversight. But apparently, Jordana, there's some news right now on social media that 12 of those Republicans that stormed that hearing are already a part of those depositions.
Oh, so they can go in.
They can go in.
Oh,
they can't bring their phones.
Right, which they did this morning.
Mm-hmm. It was grandstanding, trying to make a point.
Yeah.
But again, we should remind people that impeachment doesn't mean conviction. It means an indictment, and nothing has been done yet. They're still gathering evidence, and at some point, ostensibly, all of this becomes public.
Mm-hmm. And also, impeachment doesn't mean removal from office. Remember, President Clinton was impeached, and he was not removed from office. And it also does not mean overturning an election. That election happened. That is real. That's a fact. So it's just a mess. You know, again, it's just a junk show over there, and the grandstanding is getting out of control and trying to skew what are real facts, and hopefully maybe sway some people who aren't seeing both sides of the story or keeping an open mind. So
people are exhausted.
I'm exhausted.
But let the process work. At some point, will there be a real there?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
another fun
trend. Was a crime committed? Stay tuned.
Another fun trender today. Timberwolves right here on WCCO Radio. 6 o'clock is the pregame.
Yep.
The Timberwolves kick off their season tonight at 6 o'clock, so stay tuned for that. And here's a fun one. We just heard in the national news that a study out of the UK of 2,000 folks says they are the least happy at age 45. Is that true, Paul? Were you, look back, were you, because you're over 45, so am I, were you the least happy at age 45?
I think there's something to be said for that. Yeah, I think so.
Why?
In terms of stress of young kids, you're caring for kids and you're caring for parents. And in many cases, you just don't feel that sense of satisfaction. Mm-hmm. You're comparing yourself with everybody else. There's sort of a U-shaped happiness curve. You're happy when you're young. Who isn't? When you're 18, 20, 25, just getting started. And then all of the responsibilities of life weigh on you. And I think that peaks in your 40s. Mm-hmm. And then once the kids are out of the house, they're in college, you kind of get your life back. And happiness increases when people are in their 50s and 60s. Not across the board, yeah. Sure. If you're ill, there could be other issues. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, that U-shaped curve does have some merit. And it's not just human beings. Orangutans, apes, see similar results. They are most unhappy in early middle age. Yeah.
Really?
Go figure.
I'm in that space right now. I'm 47. And tonight, of course, I'm thinking about, all right, I have to go to Hebrew school with one of my kids, get them dinner, and also go to a Shiva call because one of my friend's mothers just died. So you're like on both of the spectrum. So I do feel a little, you know, pulled thin. I feel a little, and I just want to go home and have a glass of wine and maybe watch a show, you know, but none of that is happening tonight. So I guess I don't feel unhappy now. But I guess that it's good to know that it's going to get easier. Maybe I'll stop hemorrhaging money, you know, while paying for college and also paying for their or saving for college and paying for their activities. I get why this is a stressful time of life.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know if it's a midlife crisis so much as a midlife transition. But, you know, having kids, caring for parents, mm-hmm. worried about your career, all of these things sort of converge when people are in their 40s. But it does, in most cases, get better after the age of 50.
The study says even people over age 90 reported better life satisfaction and happiness than those 40 to 59.
No
they say
kidding.
after 60 to 65, they say it definitely starts to get better. That is super encouraging because we have a lot to look forward to, my friend.
We do.
One day at a time. Let's take a quick break. It is the anniversary of the release of the movie Purple Rain. Corey Heppala spoke with the director of that movie this morning. It was a very compelling interview. Go to radio.com and go listen to that interview. We will play a little bit about how Prince wrote the song When Doves Cry next.
Paul and Jordana.
It is the 35th anniversary of the movie Purple Rain. Purple Rain director and writer Albert Magnoli was on Corey Heppala's show this morning. It was an emotional interview. He got really emotional at one point. And we want you to listen to the whole thing. We don't have time to play the whole thing right now, but that's on radio.com. You can just look for, hey, it's Corey Heppala. But he told an incredible story about the song When Doves Cry. And I won't do it justice, but here's the story he told this morning.
I had shot a scene that I knew when I was editing I wasn't going to use. But I realized then if I pull that scene out, I still needed a bridge from where I was to where I was going with that scene gone. So I called Prince and I said, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to take all the footage and create an editorial montage. And I explained what that was.
Yep.
And then I said, so what I need now is I need music to bridge this moment. So I said, I'm going to come over and talk to you. So right away, I got in the car, drove over to his house because he was in Los Angeles at the time. And I said, here's how it goes. The themes that I need are discussing your mother, your father, the problems between them, the problems with them and you, the struggles, the tribulations, and what is the blackness of all this. And I need it two ways. It can be a slower-paced song or it can be a quick-paced song. It's up to you. So he said, okay. So I left. He started writing that day. And the next morning, as I expected, by the way, you have to understand how strange this is. It wasn't like I'm making a request and 5 weeks later I'm expecting a song. I needed to keep cutting, you know. So I said, well, I'll hear from you tomorrow, of course. So he then calls and says, I have two songs. I went over and listened to both songs. He said, what do you think? I said, this one.
Yeah.
And I said, what's it called? And he said, When Doves Cry.
He wrote that song. Hours or less. one of the most iconic songs of the time that we grew up. And just, I can't, I mean, his genius is overwhelming. And he took the direction. And, of course, it's perfect and an iconic song. It's just, his genius just continues to astound me, even all these years after his death.
Yeah, it makes me miss him even more, which I didn't think was possible.
I wonder what the other song was. He said he wrote two songs. I don't know if he said it in the interview. I have to go back and re-listen to the Corey Hepla interview because I want to know what the other song was now that he wrote and if that was somewhere else in the movie or maybe even not yet released.
But again, it was about his parents mm-hmm. and the contentious relationship with his parents. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, you know, feelings of abandonment, and it just came pouring out of them.
Right.
I mean, 12 hours, that is, I don't know. I don't know how this process works, but I would imagine it takes most artists longer than 12 hours to write a song that will last in perpetuity, right?
Because the lyrics, the music, the arrangements, all the different parts.
Yeah.
I mean, that was his genius, though. It's incredible. Incredible, incredible. And later in the interview, Corey does ask him about what it was like to go through that process, because a lot of people were saying, you know, this is not going to work. It's not going to be a good movie. It's not. This is going to be terrible. And he got very emotional when he answered that question. And I imagine maybe for just, you know, how successful it was, but also the fact that Prince is gone. So listen to the interview. You can go and check it out at radio.com. We have this cool function where you can find the exact interview. So go check it out at Hey, It's Corey Hepla on radio.com.
That was an amazing flick. The Healing Waters of Lake Minnetonka.
That's right. That's
remember
right.
when he was on his bike?
Mm-hmm. My gosh, you can forget. It was such like an iconic 80s movie that it's a cult classic now.
It's coming of age, and it's timeless, right? I hope they're still going to be listening to Prince 200 years from now. I think they will.
I want to stick in another positive story that we didn't get a chance to check on today. And in the 5:35 hour, we will line up some news nuggets of the day. But listen to this one, Paul. A woman was driving with her car, in her car in Wisconsin. She's a Wisconsin mom. She had her kids in the back seat. And as soon as she saw a police officer's lights in her window or, you know, in the back window, she knew she was going to be in trouble. She knew she was going to get a ticket because the kids were not in car seats. Kids did not have car seats. And they were of the age that she should have had car seats for them. So she's like, oh, yeah. But that is absolutely not what happened. The Milwaukee police officer, instead, his name is Kevin Zimmerman, went to Walmart, bought her two car seats, and brought them to her home. He brought them to her home, and then he installed them properly in the car. Because that is one of the greatest misconceptions about car seats. Often they're not installed properly because they're like pieces from NASA lately. They're very confusing. They can be. So he not only paid for the car seats, he brought them to her home, and then he installed them. And she was just so grateful, you know, above and beyond the call of duty to keep people who live in his area safe, to keep the mother safe, to keep the kids safe. I just thought it was such a beautiful story because usually stories like this do not end well. She would have had a ticket. And if it's a woman who can't afford car seats, she certainly wouldn't be able to afford the ticket. But what a great ending and a positive story of police interacting with their communities that they care about.
People, Jor, and you and I have talked about this. People, most people are fundamentally good.
Well, they can be.
You know, there are a few bad apples, and the bad apples tend to make news much more often than the good people. But, yeah, nice to have a little balance here.
Yeah, so I'm glad I got to share that. It's 5:28. When we get back, some other news stories that jumped out at Paul and I next.
Paul and Jordana.
Yeah.
Jordana and Paul, thank you for spending some time with us today. It's 5:35. DJ at the helm. What are you giggling about, DJ?
I was talking to Paul and Q, and I got him laughing, and then I potted him up so you could hear a little bit of laughing.
Oh, yeah. What are you laughing about? Yeah,
I can't tell you.
On the outside of the show.
Well, no, I'll tell you. Full disclosure, David asked if I'm coming in tomorrow.
That's why you're home.
It's not crabs. It's not syphilis. It's a cold. But I tried not to infect you.
A little penicillin picked you right up.
But no, there's nothing you can do. I mean, I've been popping Sudafed, and that helps with the congestion. But Dave asked if I'm coming in tomorrow, and I said, yeah. I said, will Jordana be offended if I come back in? And what did you say, Dave?
I said, yes, but it has nothing to do with the sickness.
Well played, my friend.
And I got a chuckle.
You're offended
pretty
every day. Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, get your ass back. Oh. Am I allowed to say that on the air?
You can say anything once.
The Yankees fan said that and more, so I think you can too.
Get your butt back here.
You're from the same part of the country.
All right, what you looking at that we didn't cover in the news?
Jor, I'm always intrigued when stuff of science fiction becomes fact. Mm-hmm. The stuff that we thought was impossible, magical, it suddenly becomes reality. There's a company in Canada called Hyper Stealth Biotechnology. And they manufacture camouflage uniforms for militaries across the globe. No big deal. But now, this company, Hyperstealth Biotech, has patented a new quantum stealth material. It's a special material that can disguise soldiers, tanks, aircraft, ships, by making anything behind this material appear to be invisible.
Wow.
Earlier this month, Hyperstealth filed a patent for this material, which does not require any power source. It's paper thin and inexpensive, all traits that would make it appealing for use on the battlefield. According to a press release, it works by bending the light around a target to make it seem to disappear.
Hmm.
The light can be in the visible spectrum, or it can be ultraviolet, infrared, or shortwave infrared light, making the material what Hyperstealth calls a broadband invisibility cloak. All that stuff you heard, you know, Star Trek
and
20
Harry
years
Potter.
Ago.
Harry Potter had an invisibility cloak.
Yeah.
I want that.
So, I mean, at some point, maybe there will be a commercial consumer version of this, but as you might expect, the first ones raising their hands are the military. Mm-hmm. If you could make things invisible, wow.
And
that,
teenagers.
That's a huge advantage,
and teenagers.
Tactically. If you could make teenagers invisible.
No, they want to be invisible so they can sneak out. You remember what it was like to be a teenager.
Oh, yes, I do.
Uh-huh. All right, so, well, I got something really cool. I mean, it's not as cool as an invisibility cloak. That I can't top.
Yeah, top that, huh?
Well, it's a new apple. Move over, Honeycrisp. And a Honeycrisp probably is the best apple to ever exist on the planet. Although I don't, Garden of Eden apple, I don't know what that tasted like. But this one is called the Cosmic Crisp, okay? New variety of apple coming out of Washington State. Now, they grow the majority of apples in the United States, but we created the Honey Crisp, okay? This is expected to be a game changer, they say. Growers have planted 12 million Cosmic Crisp apple trees, a sign of confidence in the new variety. They will hopefully be in a grocery store near us by December 1st. It was developed by Washington State University. They call it the Cosmic Crisp because of the bright yellowish dots on its skin. They look like distant stars. So it has a very cosmic feel. Isn't that nice? They said,
wow.
People say, I've never seen an apple prettier than these in the orchard. Isn't that delicious? 80 acres of Cosmic Crisps have been planted. Yes, but how does it taste, you're asking? Well, ultra crisp, very juicy, and a good balance of sweetness and tartness. The Cosmic Crisp. They say the Cosmic Crisp is a cross between the disease-resistant Enterprise and the popular Honey Crisp. So there's a little bit of Honey Crisp in them. The Honey Crisp, by the way, did you know this? It's nicknamed the Money Crisp. They are expensive. Nicknamed the Money Crisp by growers because everybody wanted Honey Crisp apples, remember? And they do charge a higher price at the grocery store for the Honeycrisp apples. And, you know, we get credit for the Honeycrisp. Hopefully we're making some money on that. But the new Cosmic Crisp in stores December 1st. Cannot wait.
Wow.
There you go.
Cool.
That's what I got.
Bring some to work.
I'll try and find some. Absolutely.
Shine one up and loan it to me.
I'll
give it back to you when I'm done. That's the least I can do. Yeah. Did you hear about this trial? ExxonMobil is on trial this week for misleading investors.
Well, not crazy. I mean, I guess I should have expected it, right?
What?
Corporate greed and lying to us is par for the course now. Look at the vaping, big tobacco, Halliburton. I mean, come on. It's crazy.
Well, yeah. I mean, big companies are going to protect their bottom line at any cost, right? The New York Attorney General brought this suit against ExxonMobil and claims the alleged fraud may have cost investors $1.6 billion. This suit, Jordana, alleges that ExxonMobil calculated the cost of regulations that would impact demand for oil and gas, like fuel economy rules and alternative energy subsidies. It then allegedly fudged the numbers to misrepresent how carbon regulations would affect investors. In essence, there were two sets of books, one that was forward-facing, consumer-facing for potential investors, another internal set of books that held the real numbers. So, you know, ExxonMobil now is saying that it believes the risk of climate change is real. It's committed to being part of the solution.
Sure, now they're the committed to being part of the solution. Mm-hmm.
Well, now that the attorneys are involved.
I've got a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you.
The administration does not buy into that, but now most of the oil companies are saying, yeah, it's happening and it's us and we're a big contributor. But here's the deal. ExxonMobil spent $37 million since 1998 on a network of climate denier organizations. Keep the doubt alive, right? And it's a playbook right out of big tobacco. I remember something very similar from the tobacco companies. Well, you can't prove that smoking three packs a day causes lung cancer. Today, you'd be laughed off the stage, but back in the 1970s and 80s, many of us who smoked wanted to believe that. So, misinformation, disinformation.
I love how you're trying to spin that misinformation. Lies, cheating, they knew, we're on to you, tried to deceive your investors, you're a bunch of jerks. I understand there's due process, but come on, we've kind of been down this road before.
The amount of money, again, there's trillions and trillions of dollars of carbon still in the ground, and these companies want to harvest that carbon and burn it, and if they do, what is already a serious situation will become, you know, even worse. So we'll see. I mean, at the end of the day, it's up to juries, and lawyers are going to be leading the proceedings, and we'll see how this turns out for ExxonMobil.
A federal appeals court, speaking of crazy things that are going on, a federal appeals court expressed skepticism today that President Donald Trump could block a subpoena from New York State prosecutors for his tax returns. Okay, people have been after these tax returns since before he became president. But get this. His lawyer alleged in court that even if Donald Trump shot somebody on Fifth Avenue, he could not be charged with a crime while he is the president of the United States. Asked by federal Judge Denny Chin about the limits of presidential immunity and the Fifth Avenue example, like if the president shot somebody on Fifth Avenue, that's what the Trump attorney William Consovoy asked, argued that local authorities in New York City could not prosecute a sitting president even if he shot someone in the street. And, of course, that was a back and forth during the 2016 campaign. The federal appeals court expressed skepticism about it. Judges from a three-member panel of the Second Court of the Appeals in downtown Manhattan challenged Trump's private attorney on key elements of his argument, primarily that the president enjoys absolute immunity from all investigations while in office. Now, of course, they didn't say, no, he could absolutely be charged with murder, but they challenged him. That begs the question, Paul. I think we need to do more investigating about this. If the president shot someone on Fifth Avenue, would somebody arrest him for murder? I don't know the answer. Do you?
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
It's the upside down.
Isn't that crazy?
It feels like Stranger Things, right?
It feels
the political
like we're
version
living
of
in
Stranger
the upside
Things.
Down. And the lawyer used this in court today. And the judge said, you know, well, I am expressing skepticism about the levels of immunity. We are living in a crazy time. There isn't enough time on this show for all the crazy things that go on before and during the show. So, like I said, we try to shield some of the extreme craziness. But my goodness, it's just unbelievable what goes on. I hope that we live in a country where if one man shot another man in the street, and people saw it, and it was real, that that person who was the shooter would be arrested for a crime no matter who he is. That's the kind of country that I want to live in.
Well, yeah. I mean, we keep hearing nobody's above the law. Nobody's above the law. Look, presidents come and go. This president will come and go. But the Constitution endures. And we're testing the Constitution on many levels. And we'll see how this all plays out.
And I guess that's good. Because if there are holes, if there are problems, when this all shakes out, holes can be plugged. Solutions can be created. So we don't have to go down these paths in the future. So I guess everything happens for a reason. This could be happening to secure our Constitution, to make a stronger union for the next time somebody comes to challenge it.
Absolutely. Hey, since we're on the topic, let me just mention briefly, Joe Biden, a new poll that came out today, he is widening his lead, the biggest lead in the Democratic primaries since April. Recent poll, Biden 34%, Warren 19%, Bernie Sanders 16%, and then Mayor Pete and Kamala Harris both had 6%. Mm. Senator Klobuchar,
where's Amy?
3%, along with Beto O'Rourke. So, but the fact that Biden's popularity seems to be increasing,
yeah,
among
surprising.
Democrats.
That's surprising.
Forget what's happening in the Ukraine.
And so also seems, his performance in the last debate was less than stellar, so I'm surprised about that.
I still have my doubts, but I remain to be convinced. I still think it's going to be Elizabeth Warren, mm-hmm. but I may be wrong.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.